Good afternoon, you're very welcome. You're listening to Scariff Bay Community Radio and this is Local Media This Week, the programme where we look at the print media in County Clare, the Clare Champion and the Clare Echo, and we sort of suggest to you what they're talking about and what you might like to look up. This programme is sponsored by Ruth Griffin Photography. Ruth, based in Feakle, brilliant photographer, and we thank her sincerely for her sponsorship of this programme. Delighted to be joined by most of our group tonight, John S. Kelly. John, good to have you back.
Good to be back, Jim.
And David Fleming, good to see you, David.
Good to see you, Jim.
And Luke Fleming, off the bench again for another round of an unexpected starting position.
Wasn't named on the starting line.
But he performed so well last week that we couldn't but have him back on.
No, indeed. We're missing Pat O'Brien this evening, so hopefully Pat will be back with us again very soon. Okay, looking at the headlines here, I suppose looking at the front pages there, and the front page of the Clare Champion, there's a photograph there of protests at Shannon, and it said road blocked as Shannon protest escalate. And I suppose this is to do with the military use of Shannon Airport by the US military, which, you know, if anyone or for any of us who have been going through Shannon in recent years, sometimes you'd go in and the whole place, the duty free and all, is absolutely packed with US troops.
Yeah.
John, what do you think of the US using our base and the protests that go with it?
It's a vexed question. The heart and the head are frequently in conflict with one another. Okay? It's not easy when you look at what's happening in the middle, in the Ukrainian side and in the Iranian threat. When you look at this, you say a particular kind of support should be offered on humanitarian grounds. So my instinctive reaction, Jim, is that my heart and my head is in harmony. I feel that we should, like we did in World War II, we had a benign participation in World War II.
We were neutral against Germany.
Yes.
Yeah. we had an Irish solution to...
That's a good way of putting it, you know.
Yeah. But, there's a good account of what happened, and the speeches on page two, quite prominent politicians, many on the left, came down to speak. So Breed McGrath, or Breed Smith from People Before Profit was there. There was a few other politicians there as well, national politicians. A few different organizations present. The Shannon Watch, which has been organizing these protests ever since the Gulf War. We must remember that this goes back right to the Gulf War. And they are protesting because they are arguing that by allowing the US use Shannon Airport, those troops that are being brought to and fro from all around the world, not just from the Middle East, but from anywhere, but mostly from the Middle East. But when the Afghan war was going on, they were being shipped partly through Shannon Airport, that Ireland therefore is complicit in the genocide that is, as is alleged, and I probably believe it is genocide, and our government believes it is genocide, because they are going to be part of the case that has been brought against Israel on these grounds. Our government have been very vocal on this question, John, haven't they?
Well, you're not going to draw me in. You can say what you like yourself, but you're not drawing me into your side.
Not yet.
And especially, I mean, do you see the complicity you see?
Ireland is supposed to be a neutral country. And if we facilitate, and we know that the Americans are the main supplier of aggressive weaponry to the Israelis.
Yeah.
We know that those weapons and bombs are being used in the Gaza Strip, and that civilians, women, children, men, are being targeted. And we know that thousands have died as a result of this sort of blanket military approach.
How is that influence affecting your attitude towards...
Well, I don't want any of our facilities in this country being used to help
there's
that
one
situation.
The dilemmas in the 1937.
Constitution.
I'm concerned about the inability of the United Nations, to actually take action at all on your line of thinking.
Because they can't, because the United Nations and the United Nations Security Council are so at odds with each other, where you have multiple belligerent sides, each adopting different sides, and therefore it is incompetent, incapable.
Because five countries have a veto.
Yes, five countries.
And if any of the five exercise a veto, then there's paralysis.
Yeah, and so we saw it where even a simple call for a ceasefire was ultimately vetoed by the US. Yeah. Similarly, during the Ukraine war, we will see China veto.
So how do you forget
the United Nations, and I think we should concentrate on our own issue here, which is our own support and our government's support of the US, of the facilitation of the US military. I must say, when I first saw US troops, a little chill went up my spine when I saw them in the duty free, and they were young lads and women, completely innocents abroad. They were on their phones, probably trying to contact mummy and daddy and their friends. They had been barely out of their state, some of them, I imagine. They probably didn't even know they were in Ireland.
I think Biden and the American government have made an awful hames of this particular war in Gaza. Biden has been, too silent, too complicit, too slow to criticize. I mean, I think Biden should have been in on day one, because it was obvious that a lot of people were going to be killed and a lot of innocent people were going to be killed. So I think he has been very, very slow. In fact, it took the killing of a group of aid workers, including some Americans, to actually get him off the fence.
Yeah.
So I think that's been part. Now, can I just say, the other side of it is that we'll say we have been very close to the US in this country for a long, long time. And, the US has been a huge friend to us in Ireland in many ways, economic and other ways as well. So it would be very difficult, or we'd have to think carefully before saying no in this. The other thing as well, when I see, and I let you in, Ben, when we see Dublin politicians coming down to protest in Shannon, I often ask, where were the Dublin politicians when the Dublin airport were ravaging Shannon airport for all the good things that were in it, and bring them to Dublin.
Yeah.
I don't take these people that seriously at all. It's
What are you offering the suffering then?
I mean, we can use, and we have done, I agree with you that the Irish government have been really excellent in terms of what they have, and they've drawn the ire of the Israelis on them, over the last number of months. I still think that if we were in trouble, the Americans we'd be depending on, if we were in trouble in Europe, for example, mightn't happen if Trump gets in, but hopefully he won't. But
the snails are at it again.
The snails are at it again. We'll get to that maybe a bit later. But I would be in favour of the Americans being facilitated in Shannon as our friends.
But
I fully accept that nothing is perfect.
But Jim, isn't that at the cost of, it used to be at the cost of Afghan lives and Iraqi lives, and now we can add Israeli lives to that?
Yes.
That we have suddenly got a situation where, we haven't suddenly got a situation, this has been building up. Where do we draw the line? Do we have any moral compass in this country?
Well, I think the Israeli government don't have much of a moral compass.
But and we're not supporting, of course, Israel. And we've said, the government have said we're not. And I'd say the vast majority of the people are very sympathetic
There is a groundswell of opinion supporting the Palestinians.
By association or by facilitation, we are, in a way, assisting. Like, if we believe in neutrality, now, if we don't believe in neutrality, that's a different story. And if we say, yes, we would like to be supportive, and we'd like to support NATO, and we'd like to support the European defence, then that should be government policy. And then there'd be no issue. It'd all be out in the open.
Is there are we neutral? Is there a real
we're not neutral.
Neutrality in taking into account particularly the war in Ukraine? We're not neutral.
Well, our neutrality, our stated policy of neutrality, has prevented the government from sending any aid that is considered offensive equipment rather than defensive.
Now, we probably don't have much of that.
And we don't have much of it. But we can't even send money to them to purchase that equipment, presumably. But we haven't been neutral since the Second World War, and we will. It is a misnomer to think that this country is neutral. We're neutral. We say we're neutral, but we are not. Mm-hmm. We're not because... And listen, the American government are very smart. They don't need to use Shannon Airport. But they've drawn us in. They have drawn this country in so that we are close to them.
I slightly disagree with you there, David.
They could land their planes in the United Kingdom, where they have very large bases.
We'll visit your point.
They
don't need us.
We've been drawn in, I think, since JFK.
We have. We've always sided with one side. Now, we haven't sent any troops yet.
Well,
but I don't think our facilities should be used. If we are neutral, surely we shouldn't allow their facilities. We didn't even allow our ports to be used during the Second World War for Britain, at least. De Valera was clear on that question. Now, Shannon is being used.
Back in the day.
Imagine if British troops during the Second World War or the British Navy was allowed to use our ports in the Second World War.
Well, they did travel up and down the Foyle quite a lot, but...
the Foyle was a bit of theirs.
And yeah. we did assist the British in the Second World War.
We assisted them by if an aircraft came down, we turned a blind eye. But we didn't openly and as brazenly as this allow our facilities to be used by uniformed personnel.
I would say there's probably 150,000 reasons all over the country why we don't oppose what goes on with the Americans. We say FDI, Foreign Direct Investment.
But wouldn't it really affect us?
But back in the 70s and 80s, David...
The Americans might actually respect us more if
back in the 70s and 80s, we had maybe half a dozen Aeroflot flights per day landing in Shannon and being refueled.
Yes.
And Shannon had a fuel agreement with Aeroflot. Aeroflot or Russian oil would come in, big tankers filled up, they're still there. Aeroflot would come in and use it for their thing, and then any other plane that landed, Shannon would sell them the Russian fuel. So we're even-handed.
We were even-handed. We wouldn't allow the Russians, of course, to come today because they're banned.
They've earned that ban.
Yes, they have earned that. But if the Russians, before the Ukrainian war, let's say, and the Russians said, we'd like to transport our troops, or let's say the Chinese could be even a better example. We rely now on China for a good bit of our imports and our exports, and we have a good trading relationship with China. And if the Chinese government said, we'd like to transport members of the people's, what do they call themselves, the people's army, through Shannon on their way to somewhere else. Will we facilitate that?
Maybe not.
There we go.
Maybe not. But that's because the Americans are our friends.
That isn't
and the Chinese are not.
They're not, no.
Our government would say that they are friends.
The Chinese...
They give them plenty of passports anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
I mean, indeed. I have a feeling that...
We can be hypocritical to all kinds. Also, sorry, John.
Why we should be so concerned about... behaving in the way we do behave I don't see alternatives.
The alternative is to say no, and that we don't want to be complicit in the deaths of any more men, women and children that are suffering at the hands of US allies.
Yeah, there are plenty of arguments for it. I think, I don't know if it's official national policy, but if you class it a blind eye or a bit of Asher, you know yourself, has been in existence for Shannon for many a year with regards to American troops going through it. And you go back to the two Gulf Wars. And,
yeah, you go back to that time. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And that goes back to that. And there was uproar about it then. This thing, you can argue that the relationship that Israel has with the states is, if you look at it from a political point of view in the states, Biden, I think, was left to a certain extent between a rock and a hard place. Because if he went slating straight away, he would have faced a significant backlash from the Jewish population.
He would have, yes.
Would. However...
And it's an election year.
It's an election year, and you look at what has sort of happened. But I'll say some, my bit of controversial debate for this, and just bearing in mind the time. I think the Israeli government and Ireland have one thing in common.
Go on.
They don't plan. Right? Because if you listen to... people that have knowledge in the media of Israeli politics. There is no plan for this war.
No, there's no plan for the peace.
No, but there was no plan full stop.
No.
It was a bit like...
But they might say, well, we never thought... Well, of course, they should have been planning for events like this. I had no problem with Israel defending itself after that horrendous attack on the 7th of October, when over 1,000 people were massacred. Many more, I don't know how many women were raped and how many children suffered equally. But the response was such that that turned people against the government. And I think Biden didn't realize the way the Israelis would respond with this.
Maybe,
almost
yes.
Unbelievably heavy-handed rather than targeted
response.
But
that's what I'm saying. I don't think there was a plan. Because if there was a bit of thought
put into
it. I
think it was shock. Wasn't it almost shock that this could have happened?
Well, to go into a place of, 2.5 million people to try and get at somewhere between 20 and 40,000 Hamas troops in the middle of a civilian population.
Yeah.
Well, it couldn't be done.
The equivalent during our troubles in the north, it would have been the UK government bombing Belfast, bombing Derry, bombing all the other towns, and affecting all the civilian population. I mean, it wouldn't have worked, and it's not going to work in the Middle East.
No.
I don't, but it is the US that is supplying all this weaponry. And anyway, we'll let people make up their own minds, perhaps. There's a very good write-up. Owen Ryan has it on page 2, and of course the protesters did actually disturb passengers in that they blocked the roads, which I think is actually illegal, but sometimes I think protesters, they believe that this may be the only way to get attention, and they certainly got a lot of attention.
I'm looking into his eyes and I'm wondering, if he's himself and the children were booked to fly to New York.
Yes.
And he was there stuck on the side of the road with his suitcase.
That would be the time to stick the microphone into it and tell us, should we...
Well, I certainly might have used a few expletives.
But
certainly, there is a photograph there by Eugene McCaffrey on page 2. Many passengers were obliged to park... and I know the guards and others then ferried them up into the airport. So I don't think many people missed their flights. They might be discommoded.
No, wait a minute. No, you can't say not many missed. Flights were delayed. Connections were missed.
Yeah.
And who's to blame?
Yeah.
Listen, we must go on. Okay, let John have the last word.
Well, no. So I'm just giving it to you. There is no other. You can't in the conversation there find a solution.
No. You're without a change of mind.
That's all.
You turn around and think of your family straight away, and that's Niall Nocton on a scare that he had at the Sydney stabbings. He's from Boston, but it's not Boston, Mass. It's Boston Tubber.
Down the road.
Yes. An Eau Claire man has described the scenes at a Sydney knife attack as just horrific. And of course, it happened about, what, a week ago or little more than a week ago?
This was the incident, Jim, where an individual who we now know had mental problems stabbed four women, and he himself, I think, died, didn't he, in a shopping centre?
He did, yes.
Yeah, he was shot by...
Was he shot?
He was.
And another woman passed away in hospital. A nine-month-old infant, it says here, Pádraig has it, has undergone surgery. So was he in that milieu?
He was very close to it anyway. Yeah. And it's on page 8 of the Clare Echo. And I think it's on the first front page of the Clare Champion. I think.
No.
Is it on the front page?
It's page five.
Page five, yeah. So it's just, something we have. We're not used to hearing of those kind of things from Australia. And of course, we have so many of our own in Australia that it's just happens that he got caught up in it. But thankfully, he's fine.
Unfortunately, I think it's a sad reflection on life, because the day after this happened, there was another incident in Australia, at a church. And unfortunately, it's just the way that populism / extremism is gone worldwide,
Yes.
Yeah.
I think there, David, not to harp back to it, but you talk about the lack of response, we'll say, in relation to the Israel situation. I think worldwide, there's a softly approach being taken in relation to a lot of things, that there is very little incentive not to do stuff, if that makes sense. Mm. That the penalties aren't there, or the repercussions aren't there. Stuff like this should have consequences.
Now we're focusing there, Luke, on...
Well, this is, we'd say in relation to the attack, knife crime, in particular, and it's a problem that exists in this country as well. And, we say the UK has had experience of it. We say in recent years as well, but
I think there's so many different. I think the isolation, particularly if you have mental health issues, the isolation of the COVID years, and Australia, remember, was shut down. You couldn't get in or out of that country.
Yeah.
The mental health. The other, you mentioned extremism, and I don't know it was a bishop that was attacked. Now he survived. He was stabbed in the head and stabbed in the body, but he survived it, has forgiven his attacker. But I don't know what the motive there was. Was it a religious thing or what? But there's a lot of keyboard warriors out there, and it's one thing writing these things, but you can easily then become radicalized, and you end a small group of people, and it's not prolific, but a small number of people do go to the extreme. And it's happening, as you say, it's happening all over the world. It's not just here. We had a case in Finland, didn't we, where a young school child went into a school and killed with a gun. We hear those of America on a regular basis, but when it comes to Europe, that's when it gets worrying.
De-synthesizing. People in a milieu of the kind we're talking about is a major challenge.
It is.
Isn't it?
Yeah. I think we're all desensitized, and particularly we often say our youth are, but the video games, the TV...
The attention span of all of us.
Yeah. Of all of us has declined.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
But certain things do still shock me, we remarked on this at the start of the program. There is a lot of disturbing stories in our newspapers this week.
Especially
this week. And we're not going to deal with all of them, and we tend not to deal with them.
We can raise the question, does the media have a responsibility in moulding public attitude?
Well, whether it does or it doesn't, it certainly does mold opinion, whether they like it or not. But they are mediating the news to us. They're interpreting the news. They're including things and excluding things.
I'm arguing for the point that you can take the view that, how would I best put it?
That they have a responsibility?
That they have a responsibility. Can't wash their hands. Can't say, you have to have freedom of the press.
Yeah.
That freedom carries a responsibility. We don't talk about that.
Well, I think, John, it's something that has been there for a long time, and at certain times it has been attacked. Mm-hmm. And it has been rebuffed. But I think the bigger issue that you have is it's not with the media in general, it's with online content and social media. And as David alluded to, the keyboard warriors, and we could all be a keyboard warrior hiding behind ourselves. Whereas the people that write all the articles in the paper, 99% of them have a name.
Yes.
And you could go who they are, and you know, they've gone, they've done their courses, they're professionally qualified to write about it. And you know, as I said, some of what they'll write are opinion pieces, and you mightn't like it. Mm. But you don't have to agree with it. But you don't need to go out and start to go stabbing people.
But I notice when a 13-year-old or a 14-year-old engages in behaviour akin to that, that's a bit different.
I think the problem, John, is that the younger people aren't actually taking the time
to read and to inform themselves.
Yeah. That brings you to the
because a lot of younger people are going on social media and they're taking what somebody has written as fact.
Yeah, and I would go be a little. I follow that up, Jim, and I'd say it's not just the young. Hmm. It is anybody with a mobile phone that gets their news through the mobile phone, and those companies providing that, whether it's TikTok, Facebook, whatever, they are channeling news stories that you will want to see. It's an algorithm, isn't it, Luke?
It is, yeah.
And so if you like stories about gardening, that's what you'll get. Mm-hmm. If you like stories about male toxic masculinity, you'll get those stories. Okay. And there was an RT expose just this week about what our young people, and not just young people, I mean, this is the point I wanted to really make, it's all of us are exposed to these.
Yes.
And this is often the scaremongering around refugees. Mm. Stories are being generated. Some of them true, some of them completely fictitious.
Oh, yeah.
But it makes it scaremongers.
David, would you answer for me if you please?
Is it a social media question, John?
It is a media question.
Yeah.
It is a media question. Yeah. Would you favour reaching an agreement of some sort with parents, okay? No phones in the college.
Yes, I would. In the university?
No.
Or in the secondary school? I've told my children that they're not getting a phone until they're at least... Well, I've
22.
I've said 16, but they know
Would I dare to ask you, why would you want to do that?
Because of the dangers. Because of the dangers, the influences that they will be put under, the peer pressure, I can already see how technology and devices can impact on me, and how one can easily be addicted to it. And gaming, my son is, and I was as well, if I was allowed. I still remember my parents refusing to get me a Nintendo. I still hold it against them, by the way. But
so you'll get your children a Nintendo.
Well,
as quickly
I often tell them that story. But isn't it, John and Jim and Luke? It's everything in moderation. We should be able to enjoy the technology, but we shouldn't go overboard with it. And it's getting that message across to all of our
adults and children. At the end of the table there, who taught 8-year-olds and 9-year-olds. Mm. I'm correct in that.
You are?
You
yes.
taught, You taught them gaming, you taught them...
Oh, I didn't teach them. Well, yes, I taught them computer programming. And as they made up games themselves.
Yeah, but there's nothing wrong with that. There's a few things that potentially could... I know we're running out of time and we're going off the issue, but anyways, I've started, so I'll finish.
nothing new.
There's two things that I see. It's the length of time that young people, but also people of all ages, can spend on devices, because they can be very, very addictive. And as we said, there's the algorithms that are there. A newspaper doesn't have an algorithm. You can put down a newspaper, but the phone feeds off your... and the second thing is the type of materials that are being put in front of you. And when it comes to even our national politics and international politics, how malign forces can affect elections, can affect social policy, can do, and we may not be aware of them.
So, really and truly, we need to teach our children.
And our adults.
And our adults, how to differentiate between, I mean, we see what's in the Clare Champion, the Clare Echo, and we trust, and there is an element of trust, that journalists in both those papers have fact-checked everything and it's not spouting, content which is set to inflame us or something.
No.
But that is certainly coming on social media, so maybe we need to get our children
and now
to...
David, you're the man with two young kids, so in future, instead of, you know, if they're misbehaving, which would happen on very rare occasions, I'm sure, but if something is done, instead of giving them the iPad and telling them go to their room, give them a copy of the Clare Champion and a copy of the Clare Echo and tell them go read that and you'll learn more on that than you will.
True. And that's true.
Things, you know?
Okay, I think we've reached half time. We don't have Pat again this week, so has anyone got any?
I don't, and presumably you have, but John, in your honour, last week we had a bit of Percy French, and would you believe it was Percy French's anniversary last year, so we were on the money, but I have hung up my musical boots, Jim, so it'll be over to the three of you to come up with something.
Yes, have you anything, John, something that you'd like to hear for a few moments while we relax and face part two?
Well, as we all know, our friend, that Percy, a lot of his compositions, poems in to music, okay. Percy French was our landlord. The farm I have in Rathcrohan, that was the landlord was Percy's father.
In Roscommon.
In Roscommon. So I've grown up as a child with the sound of Percy French ringing in my ears. And from a very young age, I looked to see, what's he talking about this time? Because he has something in his mind. And he always had something.
Okay.
Fill the fluter's ball.
Oh, yeah.
It's hard to beat that.
It is hard to beat that.
For social commentary in rural Ireland.
Yes.
Isn't that right?
It is. It's a good one.
There you are.
Percy French, fill the fluter's ball, and we'll see you in part two.
Have you heard the fluter from the town of Ballymuckahod? The times are going hard with him, in fact the man was broke, so he just sent out a notice to his neighbours one and all as to how he'd like the company that evening at a ball.
You're very welcome back. You're listening to Scariff Bay Community Radio and local media this week. Hope you enjoy the song there. Percy French penned it, Fill the Fluter's Ball. And we'll have another track at the end, if we've time, if we can get the lads to stay quiet.
Jim, can I butt in before they get in, and before we go to East Clare? Page 19 on the Echo, there's an outbreak of common sense.
Good.
What's rare is golden. Pádraic McMahon writes, Lahinch's incorrect spelling on road signage has been remedied on a minor scale, and hopefully it will be remedied further as time goes on. The great joke that happened back in 2012 when David, the 19 Ordnance Survey map was used to sort of change the spelling of places, it seems that a bit of common sense has been used, and that signs that have been damaged or probably written off or somebody's crashed into them are being replaced, and instead of sort of spelling them with the controversial spelling, they're being spelt the way they should be. So I will congratulate all in relation to that. And there's a great line at the end of it. He said, there's a Councillor Grant who refers to, if you know, if plan A doesn't work, Jim, what do you need?
You need plan B.
And he says, plan B, if signs are not improved, is to get Willie Daly to paint all the signs in there.
So, and he'd have a go at it.
I'm sure he would. So yes. We'll plough on now. Sorry.
Okay, maybe they'll eventually get to spelling Scariff correctly on all the signs.
Well,
they've
Ballybohan, Corrifane, Clonlara, Ennistymon, Kilnaboyle, Hinch and Milltown, Malbet to look at first.
So. First, okay. We'll wait. We've waited long enough. Okay. Staying on the same page, the previous page actually, page 18, Scariffman appointed Interim Chief of Staff to the European Commission President, and that's, of course, Ursula von der Leyen. And he's been appointed Interim Chief of Staff. His name is Anthony Whelan, and he comes from the Mount Shannon Road in Scariff. And he's been in Brussels and around the EU for quite a number of years. We had him in for an interview there some time ago, but now he's gone up temporarily, at least.
Yeah, I mean, Jim, I wouldn't have known this family, but just for our listeners, you might be able to tell us who he's the son of, which is not always a good way of pinning somebody.
Yes, well, his mother lives in Moynoe. Her name is Breed Whelan. She was a primary teacher in Scariff National School for a good number of years. His late father was Jackie Whelan, who had a garage in Scariff.
So now you have him. Originally,
and I think most people will say, David, that are around, will say, you know, a bit longer than yourself, if you say Whelan's garage, they'll know exactly.
Yes.
His uncle is Martin Whelan, who lives in Tumgrain.
Yeah. But he's a former pupil of the Cistercian College in Roscrea, and then he went on to study law in Trinity College, where he was involved in the very famous Hist Society, which is the debating society, and then he trained as a barrister, returned to Trinity for a stint as a lecturer in public law in his mid-20s, and then went off to the EU. I mean, it's wonderful for even an Irish person to have been appointed, but it's excellent for a Scariff.
He used to, from time to time, he would have been interviewed on RT when some constitutional issue came up, or some, you know, legal, complicated legal question. He would have been interviewed, we'll say, in the news bulletin for his opinion.
Expert opinion.
Honest. Yeah. But we wish him well.
We do indeed, yeah. We hope he might come back and talk to us about his experience in Europe at some stage.
Yeah, it would. Well, if his mother tells him to, he will.
Jim, you'd be forgiven to think in thinking that Scariff was the centre of East Clare, given that there's three out of the four stories, and the other half of the page is an advertorial, so we'll discount as that. So all of East Clare news is centred on Scariff.
Well, this week anyway.
Well, in the Echo.
In the Echo. I have to point out that is in the Echo.
Yeah.
The champion has a lovely, if I may be so bold as to suggest that we go here, it's a lovely photograph. People will be passing by Killaloo, maybe to work or maybe to school, and they will have noticed this enormous crane. A 500-ton crane being used at the moment in Killaloo to fit the spans of the bridge, those blue bits. And there's a wonderful aerial photograph there, drone photograph of the crane and the current progress of the bridge, because you can't actually fully see it. I often try to turn my head, but I'm afraid then of crashing the car when I'm rounding that turn. But you'll buy the champion this week and turn to page 13 and you will see a very good shot of it. And there's a little account of it there. It's an enormous crane.
Yes, yeah, but it's a big undertaking to put a new bridge across the River Shannon.
Yeah.
I think in the next 2 weeks, Tipperary and Clare will be linked again.
Linked again.
Yes.
Linked again.
Is there a time limit, I wonder, for the bridge? Did somebody say at one stage early 2025?
Well, the provisional information that if all was going according to plan, then there'll be an update within the start of next month, because in fairness,
we pointed it out previously, both Clare and Tipperary County Councils give a good update. I'd imagine it's the builders are giving the update, and David, there'll be a drone. They literally throw a drone over the whole route, and like anyone that's coming down from our side, you know, Bally Valley will have noticed that there's tarring work going on. So I'd say we're shortly going to be, you know, using a bit of
new road
to allow for the rest of it to be finished. But it, November, is my understanding that the Bally Valley side and the bridge would be finished, and that it's to be March, April next year where the works on the Balna side out to Burr Hill are finished, because that's actually where there's three separate projects. You've from Bally Valley over to the bridge, you have the bridge itself, and then there's the works on the Tipperary side. And the Tipperary works are actually the most complex because of the number of private houses involved.
Yes. That road, of course, is closed.
That road is closed.
But so we don't have long more to wait.
No, and I think part of that road will be reopened again in the next 2 months, if my understanding is correct. I think the bridge, the railway line bridge, I think that's due to be back over by June. I'm open to correction, but we'll have it for next week.
So. Yeah, lovely, great. Yeah. Okay, let's go on. So we've talked about,
I'll go back to the Echo and just sort of refer, John, your old alma mater, John, are having a spring clean, a part of the efforts to fund the 400,000 multi-purpose Astro. So it's been ongoing since the 15th of April, and it's going on to the 26th. So,
how does that operate?
Well, it's cash for clothing and scrap. So basically, Pádraig has the article here. Both collections are open to drop-off in the school hall from 8:15 a.m. to 9 a.m. every morning before school. Wednesday evenings from 6 to 7.30 on a Saturday, for those that are working, April 20th and 27th from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m.
And the thing to emphasise, Luke, in that particular, or out of that particular article, is this facility that the college are putting in, that is going to be for the whole community right across. We do not have an athletic club. And I remember being stopped on the square a couple of years back and being asked, is there any possibility of an athletic club here? Because at that stage we had Rachel Akers, you know, living away from here. Now she's back living in the college.
Yeah.
And is desperately anxious to have an athletic club.
Well, it would be transformed.
If you look at the rest of the Killaloe Municipal District, Tulla, a very impressive school, one or two pitches, not a huge amount, I think, and I'm not sure if size is a capacity issue there. So Killaloe recently did a big extension as well. So it's needed to try and sort of...
provide it.
Yeah, and you know, to sort of keep people... to stop people that might be looking at faraway hills and saying, are they greener? Are they greener? You know,
yes.
Start saying, can we sort of keep them local? You know, 410 students currently in the college. I do know Tulla, I think, is full, has about 700.
They have too many, I think. Yeah. They're more than
far too many.
Yeah, and I'm not quite sure of the number in Killaloe. But, you know, the recently opened music room and the metalwork and woodwork room, I was in that a few weeks ago.
Were you?
Very impressive. And there's classrooms there as well. So I said, it wasn't like that back in our day, John. And even though the school was new at that stage.
What was the best we could offer you in your day?
Well, in fairness, we had a few classes down in the old school, you know, down in what's now the...
Were you well behaved?
Yes, I
wouldn't go
adult education.
Adult education centre. Not a place we always liked going to because it was bloody freezing. So to get back up to the warm radiators in the school were quite appreciated. Just okay. One other thing that's on the East Clare, on the Echo, blood donation is actually, which normally takes place in the College Hall, is on the move, and it's going to be in the Derg Alliance building, the building that we operate out of.
Absolutely.
On Monday, April 29th, from 10 to 5 until 10 past 8. And if you want to ring and make an appointment, 1800 222 111, and you can, first time donors can check their eligibility at www.giveblood.ie.
Look, to anybody aged between 18 and 65, so you're off the hook, John.
I'm on blood donors.
Yeah. Right, okay.
So you're off the hook.
You're off the hook
now,
anyway.
Now,
Woman in Agony Flee, I think that's a brilliant heading. Woman in Agony Flees Limerick Hospital. Now, we haven't time to go into the...
Yeah, but it's worth a read.
It's worth a read. I could empathise with it for you because I had the same thing myself.
She had a kidney stone.
Yeah, it is... I don't know how to describe it. Really.
Yeah, she seemed to be getting different messages as well from.
Yeah.
She was told there was no.
Medication that
she needed. There was none, even though.
Do you know what that is?
Subsequently, the hospital said there was they loads of them.
So yeah. Conflicting messages indeed. Yeah. She discharged herself anyway.
Yeah.
And then she
had to get
to
the ambulance. The hospital's driving her to Galway then. Yeah. And she had to get the ambulance to. To come
Limerick.
Down halfway and collect her and bring her to Dara. Where's Dara?
It's the other side of Ennis. The other side of Ennis. The East Clare criminal damage incident, John. There was an incident of criminal damage in Church Street, Scariff, last Sunday evening, and it's not something we like to see.
Indeed. Descriptions of a man and a woman suspected of being involved in an act of criminal damage in East Clare at the weekend have been issued by Gardaí. And they're investigating in Jim an incident of criminal that occurred on Church Street.
Yes. So hopefully that Gardaí will get help from...
Anybody with information. They give a good description of the...
Of the 5'11", there was a man and a woman, a male skinny man, 5'11", in height, wearing a cap. And the female witnesses describe her small, skinny, and black hair. Believe that the witnesses left the scene in a vehicle driven by the female, and the vehicle was described as a sporty, dark grey Audi. Mm. So people might have seen it, and you're encouraged then to contact the Gardaí if you have any information.
Luke, Derg Kitchen Design had a great celebration last week.
I think we've had enough stories about Scariff.
We can go across the bridge
and there's one we'll say that you need, Derg Kitchens, we'll say, based in the industrial estate in Tungraney, as we say most of us know, celebrated their 40th anniversary a while back, and anybody that has passed by in recent weeks and months will have noticed a little bit of work going on, and a new showroom has been launched, and there's great pictures there. I think last Friday night, Jim, is when it took place.
That's right.
You had the mayor is out, and I think you were there yourself.
Marie and myself covered it for Scariff Bay Community Radio, so next weekend we hope to have a program based on the speeches that were given that night, and we did a good few interviews with employees and former employees. So,
exactly. And I suppose anyone that would have dealt with Derg over the years, there's a great picture of Gerry Dine in there. We all would have had dealings with Gerry over the year, and of course TJ McNamara, of course, as well, director. But is, you know, they employ 8 people.
How many?
Good, 8 people. Good local employment in the area, and there's plenty of pictures that we said there, page 20 and 21, of all their staff and a lot of people that were involved with the building works that went on as well. So I said,
and they've, as you were saying, Luke, they're opening this brand new showroom. So they've extended. They had a showroom, of course, but now they've extended this. So it's actually people travel quite a distance and have a look at what they can offer.
Like David, are you in any way informed on what is happening to the larger The largest unit.
It's for sale, as I understand it. I don't know if there's been any interest. It's been on the market now for, let's say, a year or more.
Oh, it has.
One hopes that it will get a move on at some stage.
I would say, Dara, that is involved over beyond, and essentially his father is involved in setting it up. There's a great line here. Dara says, I joined the business in 1998. I started with an apprenticeship. I was on the floor making all the units, cutting them and putting them together. I went to college and qualified as a cabinet maker. At that time, Jerry was in sales, and a few years before he retired, I was moved out to the showroom, and I've been there since. Right? And he says, a lot has changed between now and then. You hear stories about the three men who started off the company, and they were writing down measurements on the back of envelopes and cigarette boxes.
That's the word.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But it's great. It's a great... local success story.
And as I said, I
am a purveyor of two of their kitchens over the years, and would say the first one was very good, and the second one I can only describe as that will sort of compete with anybody, any kitchen from anywhere else you get in the country.
Well, I will second that, because I too am a customer, and I have no complaints. It's a fantastic job they did. Not only in the kitchen, but also they do wardrobes and all sorts of things.
And as the sponsor of the Chronicle, we have to give them a plug as well.
We do have to give them a plug, yes.
And Dara, thank you for supporting the radio.
Absolutely,
yes.
Which is very much appreciated. And I suppose, Jim, while we're at it, I'll hand it over now, we'll say, to David, but there's another Tom Grady man in the news as well. On page 18 in the Champion.
There is, and he's... He's pictured there in his adopted town of Killaloe. Killaloe is in the background, but he's actually, of course, a Tomb Grady historian. Says he's a Clare historian, but he's a Tomb Grady historian. It does start off, Tomb Grady historian and author Dr. Tomás McConamara is said to spend time in the U.S. state of Arkansas. Is that where Bill Clinton came from?
Yeah.
Yes.
Little Rock, isn't
Little Rock,
it? Arkansas.
Yeah.
So maybe Tomás will go out there and... why is he over there? Well, he's been invited over there by the Irish Cultural Society of Arkansas to help build a project to document the memories and tradition of the Irish-American community living there. I didn't realise that there was much of a community, but there obviously is. And, of course... Tomás is nationally renowned, now I suppose internationally renowned, as an oral historian, and how he's in charge of the Cork UCC folklore project down there. He started off, and before he started in Cuivnigo and Clare, he was doing this anyway, but he was involved in various projects. So I hope he'll send us a postcard when he when he arrives. But
when is he going out?
It's not clear. Is it the summer? I think it might be the summer.
I think it's within the next few weeks.
Oh, is it? He's off straight away.
He has a great line at the end of it. Whether it's Arkansas or Fecal, there will be stories and traditions to tell, and he should be recorded.
Indeed.
Yeah. Very good. I mean, he's really recognised as a top class historian. Yeah. I mean, he appears on many RTE. Documentaries and programs. So, local historian.
Would you love to have him working with you?
Oh yeah. Well, he has decided to pursue this his own furrow in this. But he does work for me in the University of Limerick on an oral history module. We bring him in, and
that's good.
Yeah. So and. You know, we're delighted that he can be part of that. Okay. He's one of our graduates. He did his PhD with us.
Yeah.
Very good. Clare Older People's Council Volunteer of the Year Awards, and they're on page 22 in the Clare Champion. And they're also on page 16 of the Clare Echo. And it's great to see, I suppose, in that a lot of older people, and I suppose older people are more active now than they used to be. People kind of retired into nothing and sometime in their 60s, once upon a time. Whereas now people, I suppose a lot of people who are retired are doing, voluntary work and that kind of thing in community work.
And making an enormous contribution to our society. Our society and our civic society, our organisations that we rely on, would not be the same without the voluntary contribution of older members of society, and it's
that's worrying to an extent, isn't it?
Well, you hope that the young people will eventually become old and occupy those positions. But as Jim was saying, they older people, some of them at least, have time on their hands if they don't have to mind grandchildren and all the rest, of which many of them do as well. But it's nice that they're recognised, because I don't think often we recognise the contribution that people make. Now, there's young people there as well, but it is good. Like I, today, or earlier this week, I was asked to give a lecture to the retirees of the University of Limerick.
And what did you talk to them about?
I talked to them about my latest book and where it could be bought.
I hope you had a few copies with you, David. And a credit card machine.
Yeah, but you see, people want activity.
Yeah.
They may not be, all of them may not be part of tidy towns and all the rest, but they do want to remain active. Mm. And it's a part of, it's a good for your mental health and your physical health as well, isn't it? I hope that we might all reach that stage.
We're under real time pressure. Luke, you have a photograph there.
Yeah, just on page 3 of The Living, there are two candidates in the local elections pictured there. Amanda Major, who's an independent Ennis local election candidate, and Fiona Levy for the Social Democrats, who is a local election candidate for Killaloe. Picture the two of them taking a selfie there before they leave for the Drive for Survive, which is an event that took place. And there are plenty of pictures, we'll say,
in
the Champion in
of politicians in and hope, hopeful politicians as well. Yeah. I see Minister Ryan is pictured there on page 2.
Yeah.
And so Joe Cooney is all over the papers today, pictures.
Looking David, well.
What's coming?
Oh,
yes.
Coming.
Listen, what's coming is we're about to be run out of time.
Oh, dear.
So, first of all, thank you so much, everybody on the panel. Thank you, John S.
You're welcome.
And David.
Thanks, Jim.
And Luke.
Thanks, Jim.
Did we talk about a bit of music?
We did. We were thinking there's some sort of a match going on now at this stage, isn't there?
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think so. I wouldn't know as a corporate
and,
man.
And Jim, there's
that means there's no one listening to us today.
There possibly isn't.
So we will have a Clare song to finish. My Lovely Rose of Clare. That's all from us for today. So until next Sunday, goodbye and God bless.
Oh, my lovely Rose of Clare, you're the sweetest girl I know. You're the queen of all the roses, like the pretty flowers that grow. You are the sunshine of my life, so beautiful and fair. For I will always love you, my lovely Rose of Clare.